The following is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It should not be considered investment advice. All information is believed to be current, accurate, and reliable, but cannot be guaranteed. This information is also subject to changes in the future without notice. Companies appearing on the program are sponsors of the Junior Gold Report. Hello again, everyone. Joining us today is Mickey Fulp, who is the author of the Mercenary Musings newsletter. It's a free newsletter. Mickey is a geologist who has decades of experience. You can see him, among other places, on CNBC and Fox News. Mickey, first I want to talk about the discrepancy, I don't know if that's the right term, but kind of what we're seeing here with the gold price being so strong and the junior gold stocks have kind of been lagging over the last few months. I mean, typically we see that a lot with the large caps, the seniors, but now we're seeing it across the board. So, I mean, given your experience in the mining business, what's your perspective on this?
Well, you're correct. We usually see a better correlation, especially in a rising gold price, with rising junior gold companies, mainly explorers. We haven't seen that, but it's really happened over the last 7 weeks is what is the gold price has gone up something on the order of 6% in U.S. dollars. And meanwhile, a good proxy for junior golds would be the TSX Venture Index, and that's been down 8.5%. I think there's a very good reason for that, and it started at PDAC. There have been an incredible number of private placements done, say, since the fall into the mid-spring. There were incredible amounts of money raised in all sectors of the junior resource business, but especially in the gold business. So those stocks have a four-month hold, the private placement stock. Once that becomes free trading, then a certain number of people are going to take money off the table, especially if they've seen big run-ups in the private placement. We commonly saw that. We would see private placements that would close and the stock would be two or three times the value of the placement. So I think what's happened is, starting at right around the PDAC in Toronto, there were a lot of professional investors, and I would include the brokers and the people in the business, insiders, not particularly on the companies involved, but people inside the business, took money off the table. I took some money off the table in private placements I was in. So I think what you saw were, with all this paper hitting the market, and it continues to hit the market now, and there are simply more buyers than there are, there are simply more sellers than they are in the junior gold sector at this time.
Well, Mickey, I really want to commend you on that answer. That's probably the best answer I've heard on that, just when I mentioned that to several people. And, some people, they talk about manipulation. They say, hedge funds are shorting the shares. They're going long the metals. I mean, there really has to be a fundamental explanation. And I think that's an excellent point because, I mean, as you know, it's a very capital-intensive business. And a lot of these juniors, they don't make money. They have to raise money. And so if these stocks are going to go up, 100, 200, 300%. I mean, of course the management teams are going to want to raise money at that price when the market's hot. I mean, it's much easier for them to do so. Don't you agree with that?
Well, yeah, and the people that participate in private placements are going to take money off the table. I mean, if you have a stock that's free trading in 4 months and you have a double or a triple, you're going to take your money off the table and go to, or at least I am likely, to do that with some caveat that I don't like to pay short-term capital gains tax. So, I'm going to take some money off the table. I think a lot of people have done that. You know, we have this old adage that sell in May and go away, and I really think what's happened with professionals in this business are front-running the old adage sell in May and have been selling since early March. The other thing that I haven't heard mentioned this basically occurred to me today because I was asked this question in another interview a couple of days ago. We're American guys, and we're looking at the price of gold. Well, everybody looks at the price of gold in U.S. dollars. So in U.S. dollars in this 7-week period, Gold's up 6%, as I mentioned previously, but in Canadian dollars, it's only up 3%. So it's not as what's the word I want, as drastic as we would be led to believe, because we trade in U.S. dollars, gold trades in U.S. dollars, whereas Canadian venture stocks trade in Canadian dollars. So that's another reason.
Right, that's actually a point that I mentioned in an editorial, because I personally, looking at the charts, I like to see how's gold performing against all these other markets, and I notice that even I think there was I don't know what the Canadian price was, but it peaked in February 2009, and since that point, I believe it's only up something like 12% or so, maybe 13 or 14% now, whereas the U.S. dollar price is up. It must be about 50%. So I mean, that's a huge difference there. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, a lot of us Americans, we just focus on the U.S. dollar price, but it's really the Canadian dollar price of gold that matters to most of these companies, right?
Well, no, I think the U.S. dollar price matters because the entire world thinks of gold, I think, in U.S. dollars. It's kind of the standard. So, but the point remains that we're playing two currencies here, and the U.S. dollar has shown some significant weakness over the last little while. And I want to emphasize, this disconnect is only 7 weeks old, so it's probably a perturbation that will correct itself at some point.
Okay, now let's also talk about just in terms of the gold producers and some of the other commodity producers as far as the price of oil. We saw in 2007, 2008 when oil skyrocketed, that really hurt the mining companies. Do you think that is, I mean, at these prices, is that yet a risk, or does oil have to go to 120 or 130? Before it really starts hurting mining companies.
No, I think it's a risk now, and everything is transported: food, energy, materials. So as price of oil goes up, price of diesel goes up. It costs more to run trucks down the highway. It costs more to run trains on tracks. It costs more to move boats across oceans. So we are seeing commodities at high prices. We're seeing oil at very high prices, and that is going to trickle down. I don't think the effects of $100 plus, $110 oil right now have been seen. This is a relatively short time span we're talking about with these, what I would call, very exorbitant oil prices, but it will trickle down. Commodities producers will be affected. Capital expenditures will go up. We've seen operating costs go up drastically in gold mines, for instance, and it's really going to affect the base metal sector too. So, my real concern with the price of oil, though, and I talked extensively about this in the late winter, is food inflation, and food inflation is a real concern. Food inflation is what toppled a government in Tunisia. It was the catalyst to topple a government in Egypt. If food inflation continues and we start seeing food riots in Eastern Asia, specifically China, India, Indonesia, that could be a very difficult situation for the world economy.
Right, so then, I mean, as far as we is it possible that as we come into a seasonally soft period, I mean, the sell in May go away? I actually looked at a seasonal chart of the CRB, and that showed that it typically peaks in May, and then it has kind of two bottoms in the summer. So do you think it's possible that commodities could ease a little bit, and maybe that could ease some of those concerns that you're talking about?
Well, what I think we need oil to ease, and I don't know if
Right.
that's going to happen. I've been calling for a correction in copper for months now. It hasn't really happened, but I don't think the supply-demand fundamentals support a copper price somewhere in the $4.30 range. So I expect we are seeing softening demand in copper, and so I expect a correction in copper. I mean, as I've said, though, I've been calling for that for quite a while, and it hasn't happened. I generally, your point is well taken. We are coming into a summer doldrum period, although we're probably still something on the order of 2 months away from that. But we would expect to see softening commodities. We would even expect to see a softening of gold in July and August. It usually happens. If you accumulate gold on a yearly basis, the best time to buy is sometime in July and August. Historically, gold is going to take a dip during that period of time.
Now, assuming oil climbs higher, could that possibly be a catalyst for uranium and some alternative energy, maybe natural gas, perhaps? I'm just trying to think, okay, I mean, if we see oil rise a bit more and it doesn't come back, I mean, that's going to be negative for most sectors. Could it possibly, give uranium the catalyst that it probably needs?
Well, maybe it does. I don't have a strong opinion on that. I don't see any predictable catalysts on the horizon, and I'm talking the short-term horizon, to move the uranium market back up. Other than basic supply-demand fundamentals. I've talked extensively over the last 6 weeks about why I remain a uranium bull. I'll give a talk in New York here in a couple of weeks about that very subject. But until the fear and the panic blows over, which is starting to, there's going to be a weak uranium sector, specifically uranium stocks. But at some point, the realization will occur. And I've been seeing that. I watch a couple of Nova programs on CBS or PBS this week, and even the environmentalists are saying nuclear is going to be our best option, and it is for base load electrical power. We're basically faced with burning fossil fuels or splitting atoms for baseload electrical power, and at some point, some sanity will come back in the market. The doomsdayers will go away. We will realize that this, although it was a very serious accident, it was very well contained. There have been releases of radiation. The four reactors at Fukushima, four of six reactors, will be entombed and never produce electricity again. But that said, no one has died from radiation poisoning. There's something on the order of 25,000 Japanese missing and dead. And, nuclear is one of those things that has always struck fear in people's hearts and minds, I think, basically because of the way it was first used in a war machine. And you can't see it, you can't breathe it or feel it, you can't touch it, you can't smell it. So there's a probably rational human fear about something like that.
And before we close, Mickey, let's get your thoughts on the rare earth metals. How important is China to that market? Now, for example, let's say China would have a little bit of a slowdown. Would that be a major problem for the rare earths industry?
Not specifically because there is significant demand outside of China. If China has a slowdown, it's going to affect the world's economy, no doubt, in all sectors. Would that, in my opinion, would it affect the rare earth sector more severely than other Commodity sectors, no, I don't really think so at all. I think it would affect things like copper more than anything else, industrial metals. China supplies the world with 97%. At least those are the figures we've been fed here over the last year or so, of its rare earths. They will continue to mine rare earths. The demand outside of China will continue to rise. The demand in China will continue to rise shy of a large economic disaster like we had had in 2008. I don't think it would disproportionately affect the rare earth market.
Okay, so generally speaking, in terms of resources, I mean, it sounds like you're, I mean, you said in our last interview a couple of months ago, you've taken some money off the table. So are you just looking for better opportunities, better entry prices, perhaps in the summer?
Well, I always look at downturns and corrections as buying opportunities, so I'm always looking for that. I thought the market got pretty frothy and by the middle of the first quarter and into the beginning of the second quarter, and I certainly took some profits. I think it's always a rational thing to do when stocks hit all-time highs or are approaching all-time highs. It's time to take money off. You don't have to sell the entire position, but take some profits. You know, I have this philosophy of programmed open orders to sell. So I set high target prices and I trade small tranches of stocks at programmed intervals. And, you know, in a market, a volatile market where highs are being reached, unless you do that, you're going to miss those highs. You know, I have a couple of stocks where I have traded at the all-time high just because I had an offer in at that point, and I might have been in the field in some far-flung part of the world when it was filled, but it got filled. So a diligent speculator and a smart speculator will always do that.
Well, on that note, Mickey, we thank you for your time today. We really appreciate it. Hope we can talk to you again soon.
I look forward to it, Jordan. Thank you very much.